Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, Cindy. So this is it.
Time
to talk about
all
Paris.
Right. Yes, Paris. I would not only have restaurant suggestions, but a couple of markets to go to. So there is a market, and you want to find out what day. They all have their own days. President Wilson is one of my absolute favorite markets. It is not far from the river. It's not far from the Georges V Hotel or from the Arc de Triomphe. So that's the neighborhood that you're in there. Poncelette.
So the 8th arrondissement.
8th arrondissement. Poncelette is another market that is really more for the Parisians. It is very real. You can buy soap there. You can buy food. You can buy everything. And what happens is it's actually a shopping street that all the vendors sort of just spill out onto the street during market day. And then, of course, there are mobile things that come in as well. And there are great seafood markets on that street. There are great cheese shops. There are everything you want. Butchers, produce, coffee shops. So Poncelette is an amazing market to go to. And Raspail, R-A-S-P-A-I-L, is one of the organic markets. And this is another market that is absolutely just a market and is really very special. So I suggest those. And as far as some of the other quick things to do, leaving Paris, I strongly suggest going to Versailles. It is one of my favorite day trips. You can take the metro there, you can take the train, or you can drive. It's not that far. I want to say it's 40 minutes outside of the city by car. And one of my favorite things to do at Versailles is not only to see the chateau, but to walk the grounds. And the grounds are extensive, and the gardens are gorgeous, and the fountains are amazing. So that's a really amazing. And the town of Versailles, there are lots of great pastry shops there. I've taken my pastry chef there on a couple of different trips. And there's also a market there. So there's a lot to do. And one other thing I would say about being in Paris, there's a bookstore called Library Gourmand. And I strongly suggest that, as well as a cook
you
store.
You get lost in that store.
Oh, I love that store. And not only
you personally get lost in that store.
Oh, I do? Okay, yeah. So not only do I get lost in there, but I get lost in there because they have antique books, cookbooks in there, as well as new ones. And I will buy a French book any day, any time, because I don't care if I can read the language or not. I'll figure it out. And then the other thing is the bateau mouche is a great way. The boats that go up and down the river, it's a great way to see the city. And I don't think you or I would ever go to Paris without going to Notre Dame. So, you know, those are sort of obvious things, but I can't tell you how meaningful it is to walk through that neighborhood around Notre Dame, to walk down the Île Saint-Louis, to be on that interior, little island there that is that part of the city.
The oldest part of Paris.
It's amazing, yeah. So as far as restaurants, Benoit. One of my favorite bistros.
That's a pretty fancy bistro now.
It is.
That was 20 years ago. Benoit was much more like family bistro.
Mm-hmm.
And had a long history, almost 100 years in that same family.
Mm-hmm. And Alain Ducasse owns it now. Another bistro is Chez Georges. And, you know, again, you're going to get all the sort of traditional dishes that you would want from a bistro. The frisée salad with lardon and poached egg. And another one of my favorites is Les Deux Majeaux, and that is on the Saint-Germain-des-Prés part of Paris on the other bank. And it is an amazing neighborhood. One of the oldest churches in Paris is right on the other corner. So that whole neighborhood of Paris is amazing. You know, and I would also mention Michel Rostand. Because Michel Rostang is an older French chef that is still doing a lot of traditional dishes, and his food is really steeped in history and culinary history of France. So those are some of the things that I would suggest about Paris.
And I know you always stop at Delorin.
I started to say that and didn't.
The kitchenware store.
Delorin. Mm-hmm.
I think if you're any kind of amateur cook and you don't stop at Delorin, it's a bit of a shame, because they've been outfitting kitchens since Jefferson visited.
So
they're probably pretty good at it.
They are very good at it.
if you need a copper pan that's going to roast an entire turbo or poach an entire turbo, you know, that and the fish weighs 20 kilograms, they have it.
Mm-hmm.
They have it sitting in the inventory of all their copper. They'll just bring it up for you.
Yeah, they have hundreds of beautiful copper pans in there. It's an amazing store.
And I know that there's all kinds of other places that food stores and concierge can point you to a lot of different sort of food stores and food streets and all that sort of business.
You want to move to Spain, Tony, or Italy?
Well, it's funny. The list I made is not exclusive to any one nation. What I was thinking about was these special places, like, and we'll have an interview later on in the program with one of the proprietors of a very special small hotel that does a wonderful job in the Valle d'Aosta, in the very northwest corner of Italy. And yes, not surprisingly, there's a bunch of Italian places on my list. But when you think about places that that people travel to, it's often cities and it's often very particular resorts. And the places that have often inspired me and I think have inspired us have been places that are about themselves and not about the visitors. You know, the culture is a very internal or regional sort of culture. And there are places, let's say that the one thing that's interesting is up in the northeast of Italy, a lot of the different provinces now, regions now, that are Italian were always part of the Habsburg Empire, the Austrian Empire. And parts of Friuli, parts of what's called the Alto Adige now, the Tirol, the Trentino, parts of the Veneto, a lot of those regions were all German-speaking first, and they're all part of the very wealthy Habsburg Empire. And a lot of people, I mean, you'll talk to people now who will tell you, my grandfather was very unhappy when they became part of Italy because they lived really well under the Habsburgs. And why is because so many Austrians would come, like that was their vacation land.
Okay, right.
You know, it's sort of like it was all this, it was the mountains and the mountains for skiing, and it was the mountains for cooling off in the summertime because people don't realize that with continental climate, up the Danube and that sort of business, you know, it's actually pretty darn warm and humid and kind of boring, you know. And so you go to the mountains to relax and for it to be cool and to hike and to
sounds good to me.
You hit the spas and all that kind of stuff. And so there's a big long tradition of that sort of thing. And those guys are pretty wealthy. And so they poured some money into some of these regions. So for me, and you see, it's Italy now, but in the Alto Adige, there are two different places that are small family operated places that that I love to visit. And I know you've been to both of these places. One is called Gasthof Krone. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the restaurant is Zur Krone, and it's the Crown, Krone. And we'll have to post some of these hotels on the website. And this is the town's name is Aldino in Italian, or Aldine in German. And it's about 3,000 meters, almost 3,000 meters up, I think, on the top of a mountain, this little town.
So pretty.
And
oh,
it's a
tremendous...
It's definitely a drive. If you do not like switchbacks,
gorgeous.
If you do not like switchbacks and a long drive up a mountain, don't go to this place.
Right. But you can do it. It's not like it's dangerous or something, but it's.
But this is not. Florence is beautiful and is amazing to see, and you should see it. But this is not going to Florence in Italy. This is going to the Dolomites and a mountaintop, and you're going to get the cooking of that region. And I mean, I asked. They have a famous dish in their restaurant that's a trout. It's a brook trout, and it's wrapped in speck, which is the sort of smoked prosciutto of the region. And one day they didn't have it, and I asked why, and they said Willie's off.
Oh, okay.
The fellow who the pot washer was he would fish on his way to work.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
So the trout were always pretty fresh.
I guess so.
And I think it was on the menu for €8 or something like that.
That's awesome. That's a good story.
And it's not apologetic, like, oh, we don't have the dish. Sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Willie's not here. You know,
of course there's
don't
no
you know?
Trout.
He's the fisherman. There's no trout. We have plenty of other stuff we can cook.
Right.
You know.
That's good. But, I like that.
But they have beautiful regional wines, and you have to, I would suggest staying there and eating there. You're going to want to eat there because after dinner they also have quite the collection of spirits, which you might call grappa, digestivi, whatever it is, but you may be very relaxed and digest your meal very successfully.
Yes.
And have a very quiet sleep on the mountaintop.
Well, and why not? And it's so beautiful.
Visiting that region, it's a bit of a drive, obviously, from there to all the other little towns, but there's a million old churches and ruined castles and hikes you can go on and interesting wineries to visit. And it's that is the home of Pinot Noir in Italy. It's on the same parallel as Burgundy, and it can be quite good. And it's far and away the best Pinot Grigio in Italy because of the altitude. Much more interesting wine than you see from down on the plains.
That's awesome.
The other place up there is a super wacky castle. And this is an historic hotel. Zakrona is maybe from the late 1700s.
That's pretty small, too.
And it's small.
Yeah.
This other hotel is in Appiano, and it's called Schloss Korb, K-O-R-B. Lots of K's, you know, these German-speaking boys. And Schloss Korb is a castle from the late 1200s, early 1300s. I think it was built over 20 years or something like that. It has its own vineyards. I know their wine's not particularly great. That's not the point. They have a great cellar, and they have... And the fellow, whoever the owner, has collections of two or three of the more famous Italian wines. I'm not going to say what they are because the one is just like a holy grail thing. And way back in history. And I think no one drinks it because it's largely been like a family summertime. They have a nice pool. And they have great hikes and sort of interesting. But they have wacky rooms like up in a tower and all kinds
It's a very cool place to take your
super
children.
Super quirky, super interesting.
It's what you want a castle to be, quite frankly. And the pool is nice.
Spectacular breakfast.
They also have rooms out back, don't they?
Yeah.
So you might want to requesting in the castle part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's both of these places. Breakfast, in the land of like hiking and being out there, breakfast is a big deal. And you will get a spectacular.
And an amazing view because it's
breakfast
out on the
spectacular
terrace.
View.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. Yeah, their breakfast
but those,
is
But those
amazing.
Two places, you know, I think. And the other thing just about the Alto Adige in general is the travel value. This is not a world's tourism place. There's a handful of Austrian tourists, maybe German tourists that come. There's other Italians that absolutely come because it's so different from the rest of Italy. But because it's regional travel, this is not $800 hotel room in Rome or something like
right,
that.
Right. And you really do feel the Austrian influence. I mean, there's just absolutely no question. That's you feel like you're in Austria when you're
600
there.
600 years of Habsburg rule.
Exactly.
Probably going to do that.
Exactly.
You hear Guten Morgen in the morning first thing.
Right, which is exciting. That's
but,
so cool.
But, and like most of German-speaking Italy, all along the Alps and the Dolomites, everyone speaks English, which is very easy. Other quick places on my list, but that's the Alto Adige is hard to minimize. In Friuli, La Subida, a very strange family, sort of like sprawling resort with a hotel and kitchen and right on the border to Slovenia. That's in Cormons, La Subida.
Okay.
Down in Puglia, two different places. One, a Baia Masseria, and that's a long story to explain what that is. But this is, find their website. It's an agroturismo. Lama di Luna, and it's in the town of Andria. That's remarkable to see. And then there's a tiny, tiny place that's run by a retired British diplomat, Il Convento di Santa Maria de Constantinopoli. It's in the town of Maratima, all the way down in like the if on the heel of the boot there was like a little bit of like a cushion or something, it's right there on the bay. And that is an utterly unique and remarkable place. It has 8 rooms. You have to prepay, and it's a very odd, amazing place. And great food, very simple, very restful. But those two places in Puglia are amazing. In Spain, two quick big hotels in the País Vasco in San Sebastián, Hotel Maria Cristina. It looks like this great big old posh hotel right on the Atlantic Ocean. Because it is, and it's
beautiful.
Go for it. You just
it's
yeah, just,
so pretty.
Just go for it. And in the city of León, L-E-O-N, in Castillo León, the Hotel Parador de León is a 12th century like hospital and monastery, and there's everything but gargoyles in the room that I slept in. I swear to God, it was crazy. And it has like 190 rooms, and it's huge.
Wow. Yes.
It's huge and crazy and super interesting, and just remarkable to see. You can just wander around that building and look at all the tapestries for hours and hours. But those two places in Spain, I think, are remarkable for totally different reasons. In Alsace, a little tiny place, Chez Norbert, N-O-R-B-E-R-T, in Bergheim. It's like little place, very Alsatian, not fancy, fantastic little garden, good simple cooking, great breakfast, and great sort of like place to operate if you want to see Alsace. And don't neglect how good Alsace's weather is most of the year. It's the second sunniest region in France, but it's cooler than a lot of the rest.
It's a beautiful region.
And then in Champagne, where the weather's almost never good, but the wine's pretty darn good sometimes. There's a place called, and this is a pretty posh place, Chateau de Courcelles, C-O-U-R-C-E-L-L-E-S. And it's in Courcelles-Sauvelle. It's right sort of on the route with all the not right in the towns where the famous houses are, but just outside of the vineyard area, but small, beautifully done, very personal. And the one thing I would say is they don't have a great kitchen for, say, meals at dinner, but breakfast, lunch, simple things, snacks, coffee, they do great work. But it's funny for me, a lot of times the staying in the place and feeling cared for and having a place that speaks of the region that they're in, that and just being able to sit there and read a book off the shelf, or you know, having then asking about what are the typical things that are the pastries that are made for breakfast or whatever, sometimes that's the stuff that sort of fuels my heart for the things that we do the most. Well, when we come back, we're going to have an interview with Laura Roguet from Hotel Bellevue in the Valarosta. All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine.